Shogger, everybody's fired up. Everybody has a different opinion. What's your thoughts on the Scheifele hit?
What are my thoughts? My summation of it would be that he had a player in a vulnerable position and chose to throw the hit, and the player was badly hurt. And in today's NHL, the expectation is if you're going to throw a hit when a player is vulnerable and you hurt him, you're going to pay a price for that. So bad decision. I don't think he should have thrown the hit. I don't think that he should have, taken the opportunity with the guy stretched out the way he was, and just a bad decision, so he's going to pay a price. But with that said, I understand that people who maybe are a little bit older school thinking would make the point that he cannot expect to be given that lane to the net. It's not realistic for him to expect to take that aggressive lane to the net and not be hit. And so the players have a responsibility to, look after themselves as well. So in today's game, you don't take guys out when they're vulnerable like that, or you pay the price, and that's what's going to happen here with Scheifele. How about you?
Yeah, I don't think it's as egregious as many are claiming, like rest of the play. I think he probably gets a game or two. Right?
Well, he's not getting the rest of the game.
I think.
Yeah.
No, well, he can only get five anyway, so he wouldn't technically, if it goes seven games, he doesn't even get the rest of the series. And Joel Edmondson is already on record as saying, hey, if he doesn't get the rest of the series, we'll be making his life really uncomfortable. So, great.
I saw some people on Twitter, like, when they heard it was just a phone hearing, they're like, the NHL has put Mark Scheifele in a position to be back in this series at some point, as if the NHL has done something horribly wrong here by not suspending him for the rest of this series for everybody's sake. It's like, what? Like, guys are just fired up, right? Guys are fired up. They say things, It's not, I agree with you. It's not the most egregious thing we've ever seen. It was a devastating, really hard hit. I don't believe that he targeted the head with the hit. I don't believe that he threw some crazy, massive, illegal elbow. I think when you're that big and strong and you skate through a guy like that, like when you hit a guy like that, the head absolutely is going to be contacted, and it was as part of it. But this isn't rest of the playoffs, and I just don't view it that way.
Oh gosh, no, it won't be rest of the playoffs. It's one or two games. It's a hard hit, and like I listened to Paul Maurice, and Paul Maurice brought up some valid points. Right, didn't lead with the hedge, hands are down, all that stuff. It's a little bit late maybe because the puck's already gone. That's probably because if Evans still has the puck in his stick and that hit's delivered, I'm not sure anybody really complains.
I mean, I wouldn't say it's late. Like, Scheifele launches into the hit as the puck is being put in, and the puck is in when contact is made. So, I mean, and I don't know. I think I've had a messed up view of charging for a long time now, because when I read the NHL's actual definition of charging, which they can use in this situation, the distance traveled is being relevant.
Yes.
I'm just a little bit confused about that, like the distance traveled. So, to me, charging was always if you, like, take 10 hard steps and blow a guy up, that's charging. If you want to avoid the charging call, you stop your feet moving and you glide into the hit and throw the hit. And that's what negates the charge. But I don't know. I guess distance traveled. So would it have mattered if he'd have just jumped off the bench on a change and only come in from the red line? How's that different?
Well, it's a fair question because I looked at it this way. Let's say Scheifele, the play obviously would have to be set up different. But if you come, let's say you're at the hash marks in your own zone and you come back to the net like that and hit the guy, it just, whether it's fair or not, the NHL is going to look at distance travel because they've used that before, right? I think they use it in one of the Rafi Torres suspensions, right? So, and someone else. So I think that's probably, I wrote it earlier, I think that's where he's going to get dinged. And I bet you when the description comes out from the NHL and they hand it down, I'm going to guess the distance traveled will be one of the onus points that they use in that one. I know some Oilers fans were fired up because they're saying, oh, look at the penalties. Winnipeg's finally getting some penalties called on them. But when I looked at the end of the game, And I see the power plays. You know, Montreal did get four power plays, but one of them was a puck over the glass, right? So technically there was three penalties called against Winnipeg for actual infractions. And that Edmonton did get three penalties in each of the last two games. So I don't know if the refereeing's that much different, but Peter DeBoer, I don't know if you watched any of the Colorado-Vegas game, Shogger. He didn't really like the penalty in overtime. He thought it was kind of soft, a slashing call that led to the power play winner for Colorado. Vegas dominated the second and third period, outshot them like 31 to 12 and had lots of chance. And Grubauer, like the save he made on Tuck with 6 minutes to go was unreal. That was a great save.
And talking about penalties, I'll bounce back to the other series. I mean, the weakest call I saw last night was the roughing on Kotkaniemi. Remember that one on the boards?
Yeah.
He just basically kind of hit the guy and like it was... They were just stunned that that was called, and I'm thinking, holy smokes. Like, man, when you think about some of the stuff that went on in the Winnipeg-Edmonton series, frankly, in both directions, I don't blame players for kind of being a little bit confused about, like, where's the standard? And it just, you watch games on TV, it feels like it's different than the standard in the series we're playing in, and it seems like it's a little bit all over the place. So I understand that criticism. Don't blame DeBoer for his feelings. You know, there were calls late in that game as well. Wasn't there a power play late in that game as well? Who had the power play in the game? Did Vegas have the power play late in the game? In the last 4 or 5 minutes there?
Yeah,
they're making calls at times in games that generally would be like, you can get away with a lot at that point in the game unless it negates a scoring chance. So,
Was a scoring chance on Pietrangelo, right? By the Devin Toews trip you're talking about?
Was that the one late?
There's like 3.5 minutes left.
Yeah, where it takes away scoring chances, that's where it has to be, you know, it has to be. But anyways, yeah, it's definitely a topic, and it's different in each series as you watch here and there, but I don't know that you're coming out of any series saying that's a main storyline. Like, I get the idea with McDavid to play that many games and not draw a single penalty is a little bit silly. The way he plays the game, I think there's a bit of a different standard that is developed at times for what you know, he's allowed to endure out there. But that's neither here nor there now.
Lots of people, you know, say, hey, Evans basically had his head down for the entire time. Is that a factor at all for you?
No, I think he shoulder checked on his way back, but it was further up ice. So I think he knew he had pursuers. And I just like, that's the issue for me. And I don't want to be hard on him. Like it should be a suspension. It will be.
Yep.
Not a good hit. Don't make that hit. Player was vulnerable. Don't throw that hit anymore. You can't. Even if you think you're throwing a clean hit, you can't. But I just don't know how you can expect in a one-goal game with a minute on the clock, you're pursuing a puck behind the net, that you're just going to be allowed to grab that thing and wrap it in when you've got two guys pursuing at full speed. I mean, he took a hit to make a play. Now, what's realistic to expect of Mark Scheifele in that situation? Is it realistic to expect him not to play the body and to just let him have that lane? The fly in the ointment to that argument is he didn't try and play the puck. If you were that worried about the goal going in, you're super focused on the puck, and you try and get a stick-on-stick play, that's what takes away the danger of the scoring chance, not blowing the guy up. And so then all of a sudden Shifley's intent can come into play. Well, did he know it was going in and he was mad? So in that split second, he was frustrated and decided to drop the shoulder and do that. And now people are trying to get into his head and figure out what he was thinking, right? But I just think, you know, when you're Evans there, I just don't know that you should expect to be allowed to take that puck like that and not take a hit of some sort. And ideally it wouldn't be that hit at all. But you got to know that's a danger zone, especially when you've shoulder checked earlier and you know there are guys pursuing hard. So there's some responsibility there just to not put yourself in a vulnerable position. And in the old NHL, it would be like, hey, man, keep your head up. Like, you can't make yourself vulnerable like that because you're going to get hit. And it's a fast, tough game. It's changed. Players are expected to take better care of one another out there, especially when a guy is deemed vulnerable.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, you got Carolina tonight. Are you surprised they're going away from Nedeljkovic tonight and going to Mrazek?
Am I surprised? I don't know. Like, I just wonder how you feel about about as you're getting deep into it and it's maybe not going the way that you want it to go, continuing to go with the guy that hasn't really been there before, hasn't really been there and done that before, as good as he was. So I'm not sure if they just feel like a little bit more veteran poise, a little bit more experience, or maybe it's just a matter of maybe they don't view it as a massive difference between the two in the moment and to shake things up a little bit. So I wouldn't say that I'm surprised. I mean, it's not, I was way more surprised, way more, that Vegas decided to start Lehner in their series. That one surprised the hell out of me. I don't feel the same in this situation to make a switch in net. You?
Well, those two, you know, they've switched back and forth. Nedeljkovic, I don't know, maybe the coach is looking at the Goudreau goal. You know, it was
sure.
A 1-1 game.
100%.
Yeah, and so Nedeljkovic did play very well. I'll say this, though, it ain't going to matter. That's at the end of the day.
Too much, eh?
No, they're Tampa Bay. They just, Carolina could win a game. They might even win two. I just don't see them winning 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
And, they'd have to sweep Tampa in Tampa here. Otherwise, Tampa goes back and they're up 3-1. And do I think Carolina's going to win 3 straight over them? I can't see it. Tampa's, like, Carolina's good, but now they don't have Trocheck and they don't have, like, their depth has taken a big blow.
Trocheck is a big loss, yeah. Too. He's such an important player.
So is Niederreiter. Both
series.
Of them.
Yeah,
both
sure.
Of them. Yeah,
that might be a lot to come back from, but I don't think, you know, after a few games of the Toronto Montreal series, I think people might have thought the same. I just don't know how they're going to beat that team. You know, they're going to win
the
that many games in a row.
Toronto's never won a playoff series. Tampa won the Stanley Cup last year.
Yes, very, very true.
Group of Toronto players, I should say. The main core, not the
yeah.
Leafs. Of course, the
yeah,
Leafs have
sure.
won. It's just a long time since the Leafs have won a playoff series, which leads me to one player, Dougie Hamilton.
Yeah.
Potential free agent for the Carolina Hurricanes. Had Tripp Tracy on the DFO rundown, and he is adamant that Slavin's their most important defenseman. He really likes Dougie Hamilton. Says he's elite offensive player. He's okay defensively. And I wonder, like, I look at Dougie Hamilton, there's lots of his numbers, say, hey, this guy's going to get a big ticket. Like, do you foresee Carolina letting him walk?
Well, I know... And you don't need to hear it from me. I mean, I know how important they feel Slavin is to their mix and all the different things he does for them. It doesn't surprise me to hear that they would be prioritizing, prioritizing him. So, and I'm just, while we're talking, I'm trying to call up their, how tight are they going to be on the cap and what's their, what's the space that they have to deal with? Is it going to be an impossibility?
No, they have Carolina wasn't they had some cap space. Like this past season, Dougie Hamilton made 5.75. So let's say he goes to 8, right? Like that's a $2 million jump that he would get to. But Martinuk and McGinn are both UFAs, and you know those guys were each making $2 million. So if one of them doesn't come back, that kind of, you know, Dougie Hamilton's raise goes right to them.
Maybe the problem is they've already got 4 guys making over $4 million on the blue line, right? They got Slavin, Shea, Gardner, Pesci.
Yeah, well, Jake Gardner's not helping them. Yeah.
Jake Gardner's not helping them,
that's for sure. But
for sure.
You know, and their goaltending, right? Like Mrazek's a UFA at 3-1. Now Nedeljkovic is an RFA, he'll get a raise, but you know, he's a rookie. He doesn't have much negotiating power, right? So no, I think Carolina, you know, they can afford $8 million. Right? Like, Aho's their highest paid at 8.4. And remember, he got offer sheeted by Montreal to get that, mm-hmm. right? Like, their owner seems to like to kind of play hardball a little bit. And Aho got an offer sheet, but that offer sheet turns out, I think Carolina's like, yeah, we'll sign this. No big deal, right? 8.4 isn't a terrible overpay at all for Aho. And I'm kind of curious to watch what they do there in Carolina because they got a pretty good team. There's no question about it. You know, they might just be running in, like, they got a bad matchup this year in Tampa Bay, right? If this was in a normal season, they wouldn't have to face Tampa until the third round because they're in different divisions.
Yeah, that's a tough goal for them to bang up against that team this early. That's something you'd like to build towards a little bit in the playoffs. You know, like Tampa, they're such a tight group, and they've been through it. They've won. They're just going to be right in their comfort zone with where they're at. Whereas this Carolina group, maybe they just needed another round to find their playoff selves and to be able to, you know, get their game into position where they could at least take a good solid run at it. We'll see. They may still, but just really poor luck for them that they have to draw that card this early. Although, I mean, some might say the sooner the better because you're probably dealing with fewer injuries, but then they get all banged up and they're just missing crucial players, like guys that play the game in a way that you need to have a chance against Tampa.
Oh, it's true. Yeah, Tampa's pretty good. And you know what, though? I was looking at Tampa. They might lose Yanni Gourde to Seattle in the expansion draft, right?
Oh,
and
so I wonder if they might... Yeah, I haven't run through it with them.
Yeah,
That's a quality guy, man. He lose a player that good.
Yeah, like I looked at Tampa because they're going to protect probably 4-4 because you've got McDonough and Hedman, and then you've got Cernak and Sergachev on the back end. Because everybody knows, you know, good if you got four legit defensemen, you got a chance every year. Then Vasilevsky's and goals a no-brainer. Then you got Kucherov and you got Point, and you got Stamkos and Cirelli's the young guy they just signed. They really like him. I think they like Yanni Gourde, but you can't keep them all. And so I wonder if, like, I think teams would come calling to trade for Yanni Gourde. Right. Although Tampa might, well, because they're going to have to move two guys, Shocker. Two of those, yeah. Gourde, Johnson, Killorn, and Palat. They got to move two of them. But I think Gord's the one they'd like to keep the most because he's got 4 years. But they might end up losing him either to Seattle or via trade. So, man, Seattle, the offseason of Tampa, whether they win the cup or not, to me is a fascinating team to watch.
Yeah. And then there's always the opportunity to make a deal with them. You know,
you're still going to lose a guy, right? Oh, with Seattle, you mean?
Yeah. You can make a deal with them so that they take, you know, they take somebody that doesn't hurt you as much. You figure something out, but they have to be willing to do that. And we saw other teams get into trouble in the last time around trying to make those sorts of deals. So, but that's where Seattle's licking their chops. I mean, they're looking at the real good teams, and those teams are good for a reason because they're deep. So that's where you're going to get a top six forward. You're going to get potentially a top 4D man on a lot of other teams. You're going to find real quality players. So. It'll be fun. I'm really interested, man. I'm interested and looking forward to this, and I can't wait to see them hit the ice and see what their team looks like and how it's all shaped. And I think, it's a lot to talk about after a strange season, and I'm looking forward to it.
Shocker, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Okay, you too, pal.